This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on March 17, 2026 in Millersburg, Ohio.
The year was 2021. I was 20 years old, and our family business was going through some pretty major change. Our shop foreman was leaving, and more leadership was needed. After shuffling, discussing some different things, I was assigned the role of sales and shipping, which was what I wanted to do for some time. And yet, I was outside my comfort zone. I remember one day being out in the sales area and thinking about this, and I told Dad, you know, I know that I won't be able to do sales like my brother Daniel did. That was in the role that prior to me. And his response was something I never forgot. He said, you don't have to do like Daniel did. Be yourself. And that stuck with me. That's for all of us in leadership role here today. Why we need to empower our people. Because sometimes we forget that really only three things happen naturally in an organization. Friction, confusion, and underperformance was what Peter Drucker wrote. Everything else takes leadership. It's our responsibility to lead our people. Sometimes we get the idea, well, we're not above anybody else, and that's the case. We really aren't. But someone needs to go first. I like to think about leadership as first among equals. Many of you today are business owners. Some of you are entrepreneurs. You started the business on your own. As the company grows, or when it was new, you were the finance person. You were the sales and marketing director. You were the chief executive officer. You wore all the hats. And then the day came where you had to hire an employee. You had to delegate. As a business grows, we can easily become an obstacle if we don't delegate. It's like the saying goes, in order to grow, we have to let go. Think about this for a moment. What if you, as a business owner or leader, died tomorrow? Would your business survive? If we really believe what the scripture says, that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, that our business is really the Lord's, it behooves us to take time to put things in place and the leadership team and people in case that does happen. It happens to people like us. About 3 years ago at Greenfield Farms, we were at a place where things had changed. We needed some leaders in our two distinct departments. One was we blend fertilizer. We also distribute organic produce. And we needed some leaders. The people we had were very young. We analyzed the team, and the people we came up with were 16 and 17 years old. But they had some key character traits that we needed, and we chose them as our team leaders, and they did well. The key in, if we really empower our people, it helps them become someone they never dreamt to be possible. They reach heights they never imagined. We need to provide clarity and direction for our people. If we do so, they go from being an employer or a worker to becoming stakeholders. The roots go deeper. That's the type of people that we want on our team. We sometimes forget that the greatest desire of mankind is making a difference and helping someone else succeed. That's true fulfillment. That's our job as leaders. And then sometimes the question comes up, what if we'd spent all this time and effort and training our people, and then they leave to do something else, maybe even compete with us? But even worse, what if we don't train them and they stay? That's why it's very important to train our people. One of my favorite stories about leadership and delegation is, you know the story with Moses out there in the wilderness. He had this stiff-necked and stubborn people he was leading through the wilderness. And he was going out there and he was a busy man. He had people showing up all the time, every day. He was dealing with issues, challenges. And then his father-in-law, Jethro, shows up one day. And remember, he didn't understand or fathom the challenges Moses had faced with all these people. And yet, in observing him, he said this, "It is not good. You're going to wear out. It's not sustainable." He didn't leave it there, but he said what he should do. He said, that he needs to put some people in place. He gave them good advice. His recommendation was what kind of people to put in place. Able men, competent, they had what it takes, such as fear God, men of truth that hate covetousness. And you know what? Moses listened. He could have thought, "And just what do you know about all this?" But he took his advice. He put people in place. That's for me and for you today. The leadership team is a very important part of our business. And you might think, well, I'm not there yet. Someday I might have one. If you have a leader or a supervisor anywhere in your business, you are there. They shape the culture. They set the bar. They go the way. Choose them carefully. They will impact the future of your business. It is very important. It's not for the faint of heart. It means having tough conversations at times when it might not be convenient, but it has got to be done. So what really should we be looking for? Remember that seats at the leadership team need to be earned. They're not given. So what characteristics do we really need to look for? And from my experience in business, of the four traits that are most important in leadership, humility stands head and shoulders above all the rest. It's not thinking less about ourselves, but it's just let's forget about this person. Let's focus on the other people. One of my favorite songs in our, for those of you German-speaking people here in the Liedersammlung, is page 199, Demodische Schenfte Tugen. The second verse goes something like, "Sie Jesus vor demütig, hob sich selbst nicht. War freundlich, lieblich, gierig, wie uns Gottes Wort bericht. Man befand in seinem Leben, gar kein Prangen und Erheben, drum spricht zu mir und dir, lerne Demut doch von mir." The English translation is something about the, look at Jesus. He was the perfect example. He didn't exalt himself. He was good and friendly toward all. Now, for you and I, look to Jesus for the perfect example. The second thing is integrity. In today's, we're bombarded with technology and the advancements of today, and it is paramount that we as leaders are morally pure. That we have a walk with God. That we take time like Jesus did to go out on the mountain alone with him. We cannot expect our people to be leaders of integrity if we're not walking the talk. Next is empathy, the ability to listen and care deeply. Beyond the moment or beyond what pertains to work. Every one of our people is going through a challenge in their life. You and I are too. Everyone has to some degree. Let's care about those things that are important to them. And then the last one is passion. The passion to do something even when it's time to go home. Sometimes it's that fire in the belly. Sometimes passion is really important. And if a person has passion, sometimes it's a challenge to balance between family and business. And sometimes we don't get it right. Last night was such a time. There was a conversation that we needed to have at work that was overdue. I came home an hour late for supper. And those times come up, and that's okay. But we need to communicate. I didn't. I failed. When I came home, I made amends with my wife, and I apologized. The point is this: our spouse is willing to give and forbear. Our job is to do what I didn't do last night, and that's communicate. We're in this together. And then there's right people, right seats. Somehow our slide is not showing up quite correctly here, but either way, right people, right person, right seat is our goal. And sometimes we have the right person in the wrong seat. And then there is times when we have the wrong person in the wrong seat. If that happens, if you're there, God help you. Help that person find a better place to work. Not all people are meant to work in our businesses. Right person, wrong seat. About 4 years ago at Greenfield Farms, it was middle of September. Produce season was in overdrive. And our warehouse manager left the company, and we needed a person right now. We had only one person that really made sense in the organization to fill that role. And he was doing something else, and I met with him one evening, and I told him, this is what we need. And I told him, it's a tall order. It will be really hard. It's not a journey for the faint of heart. But I am willing to be with you every step of the way. I will be there to help you. I believe you have what it takes. He gave it some more thought for a couple days, and he came back and he said, I'll give it a try. And he did. The first day on the job, I believe, was on a Thursday. And a little after lunch, I went out to the warehouse, and it was a zoo of activity. Produce was coming in by the truckload. The dock was a beehive of activity, and trucks were being loaded and shipped out. But the moment I saw his face, I realized something was terribly wrong. I went up to him and I tapped him on his shoulder and I said, "Let's go out back. We need to talk." Went out behind the warehouse in the grass. He sat down and he cried. "I cannot handle this." He was completely overwhelmed. There was only one right thing to do. We went up and got his lunch bucket and asked someone to take him home. And I told him, "Just go home and rest until you're ready to go back to work." We moved him back to his previous role and he worked well. But we made the wrong choice by thinking because someone is good here, he will excel over in this spot. We can easily promote people out of their sweet spot. Let's utilize their talent. So how do we determine if the people are the right people, the right person in the right seat? I like this acronym, GWC. They get it. They just get it. And they want it. They're hungry. And they have the capacity. Capacity is tied into that passion, and they want. If they have GWC, it will probably work. If they don't, it probably won't. We've had a situation one time in one of our departments, and it seemed this person, he was humble. He was a sound Christian man. He even wanted the right thing. He was supportive of the culture, but it just wasn't working. And after reviewing it some more, what was really missing was just passion to make things happen, to get it done. Enthusiasm is contagious. If we are enthusiastic about our job, people will be as well. Right people, right seats. We need to cover personality assessments. I'm sure a lot of you have seen these, this profile. There's StrengthsFinder, there's Culture Index, and there's many more. This is just a few of them. And over the past 10 years, we've been bombarded with these personality assessments. And they're great tools to help people understand where they are and how they respond to different situations in the company. But use them with great care. It is not some silver bullet or some magic wand to make things happen. They measure how people react, and they actually are surprisingly accurate. But just remember, they don't measure character. Leaders seldom fail because of lack of skill. They fail because of the lack of leadership character. Think about leadership as an iceberg. So an iceberg is submerged in water, 90% of it usually. 10% is visible. The 10% is the skill that is needed. What's underneath the water is what's inside at the core. That is leadership character. So some of the pros and cons in using these personality assessments, one is getting the people in the right seats. That's a pro, and helping them work in their sweet spot. But just be careful. I have seen these used destructively, putting people in a box. He just doesn't get it. He doesn't fit. Or then someone says, "Well, this just is the way I am." Think about this as a tool in a tool belt. It's like a hammer on a carpenter's tool belt. A hammer doesn't work to square off a board or like a saw. They're effective and you use them as a tool. In fact, they sometimes get a bad rap because they're misused. In many ways, these personality assessments have been misused and abused, and that's why some of the danger. But I am concerned, especially among our young up-and-coming leaders, being enamored with this as the magic tool when it really is only one tool in the tool belt. Just use them with care. So then we go to empowering our people. First of all, we ask, well, who is responsible? It's like Dad taught us boys in business that when something doesn't work, management is always at fault. That's where the buck stops. And sometimes when I've seen situations, we've been there ourselves in a family business, you ask one of the boys, so who's the boss or who's in charge? Well, it kind of depends. depends. If you want something in sales, it's Jake, and if you want something in operations, it might be Jonas or Joe. But who's in charge? Where does the buck stop? Well, it kind of depends. My question, who is in charge? It's kind of like going to church on Sunday morning. You asked, so who's the bishop here? Well, it kind of depends. Moser. It's just he is the bishop, and he's in charge. That's the same in a company. So it's important that everyone knows where the buck stops. The owner or the CEO is responsible to train the people. And if you're here today, and if you're not a leader or a business owner, if you're married, you are a leader. You are a leader at home. And for those of us that are blessed with children, may God help us fill out our leadership role in that realm. That we take time to think before we speak. 2 weeks ago, it was February 28th on a Saturday, you might remember, the sun was shining, it was a beautiful day. We like to make maple syrup, and this year we decided to skip and we're building a sugar house for next year's season. We were building walls. We needed to put up one of our sons does poor wall work. We were planning to do the foundation, and we were setting up the foundation that day. And we were out early in the morning, and it was a beautiful day. The sun was out, a few of the boys and myself. And we planned to have a late breakfast, like brunch. And as we were heading in, our third son, Isaac, informed me that he is going rabbit hunting with his friends this afternoon. And I just, without thinking, I just said, you really should stay to help us today. We really need your help. And then I left for the house. As I was walking up there, I was having second thoughts. And my conscience was smitten. I asked God, so what really should I be doing? I actually need your help right now. What should be my response? Because after all, we need his help. Got up to the house, and then I remembered that today was the last day of rabbit season. And I thought back to when I was a boy. I knew the answer. When he came in for brunch, I could see on his face that he wasn't feeling good either. Then I told him that I remember that today is the last day of rabbit season, and we approve of the friends that you plan to go with hunting. I was there once too. It will be okay. I hope you have a good afternoon and a successful hunt. He left, and it all worked out well. Let's remember to think before we speak. As dads, as leaders in business, we cannot give what we don't have. We have to have that in here. So then, one of the greatest examples of empowering people is in Matthew 10. If you're doing the scriptures like most of us are, we're probably going to have that next time for services. I actually know maybe council, but whenever it's in, right after the Sermon on the Mount, I think that ends in Matthew 7, Jesus was ready to send out his disciples. This is now, he had done very little training that we read of, but now he was sending them out. I find it fascinating to see how he handled this. He told them where to go and where not to go, what to say and what to do. He told them what to take and what to leave and what to expect along the way. He told them that you will have face opposition, but don't worry about what you're going to say. I'll take care of that for you. He warned them about the dangers along the way, but then he also said something else. Three times he said, fear not. That's for us, empowering our people. He didn't go along to coach them. He just showed them the way, and he sent them off. It's a great example for us. It's our responsibility to share the vision and the purpose. Why are we really in business? We need to show the way and go the way. That is our responsibility. Sometimes we think about what really, we have all these machines, we have buildings, we have all these assets, but let's remember our greatest asset of all is our people. Our part of our team at Greenfield is here today. Thank you all for being here. One of the greatest joys in life is to be part of a team. We have a very diverse management team and team there at Greenfield, and I'm blessed to be able to be part of that. Make sure that they know what success looks like. Just yesterday, I asked one of our team members that's here today, I asked him, so tomorrow I'm speaking on empowering our leadership team. What should I tell the people? And he said something along the lines of, make sure that people know, your leaders know what you expect of them, but then let them do their thing. Don't put them in a box and think that you have to do it my way. I like this quote, maybe it's on the next slide and we'll cover it again, but remember this, when expectations are clear, accountability is fair. When expectations are clear, accountability is fair. We tend to at times delegate responsibility. We hold people accountable, but we don't give them the authority to make decisions. That's very frustrating. Let's not go there. And then there also comes times when we need to criticize or maybe remind someone. Let's always try to do that in private. There's always times to do that. And then if there's praise, do that so that everybody knows. Make sure they know what a job well done looks like. Then also remember that once we were where they are, let them fail forward. Sometimes in our journey of becoming a leader, we also make mistakes. That's how we learn. That's how we grow. Let's help them do the same. If things happen where things go south and it doesn't work out, let's always use those opportunities as teaching moments. Not as much that you screwed it up, that what happened here? And ask some questions. And guard against the micromanaging, being there breathing down their neck. Nobody likes that, and you will never have leaders reach their God-given potential. Here is an example that we started back in our family business at home, and you probably can't read it there in small print, but what it is a crash report. Our goal is whenever something goes wrong, a shipment gets shipped to the wrong person, is late an arrival, or whatever it may be, we have this simple form that we just fill out. The first question is, so what happened? Well, customer got his order that was late. Why did that happen? Well, someone had the wrong BOL or whatever had happened. We asked why that happened and what was the cause of that to happen. We asked that why a few different times. And at the end, it's not as much to determine who screwed it up, but what happened, and most of all, what are we going to do to keep this from reoccurring? And we also track the cost. The key is keep it simple. Don't make it complicated, then you won't do it at all. And then to really make it work even better is tie it into some other performance metric. This is a basic example. The way we use ours is we have a monthly sales budget. And if we hit that budget, we put a small percent off to the side. Then we subtract those crash report expenses, and whatever's left over gets divided among the team. It works different in different companies. Don't try to duplicate this because it probably won't be the right exact formula for your company, but do something. It helps pull everyone together. And I marvel how often that we reach our sales budget the last day of the month. Somehow, if our people know where it's going, yeah, they have a way of getting it there. a lot of you are here are married today. I won't ask for a raise of hands, but if I would ask you, how many of you have a wife that likes to be managed? Probably no one would raise their hand. Mine doesn't. But you know, our wives like to be inspired, encouraged, and cheered on. Let's see that as our role as leaders. We tend to think, well, we need to have accountability for people, and that's true. There are times when we need to have accountability, but more often than not, we fail to inspire and encourage our team as they continue on. Let's make sure that we do that. We need to have guardrails for them and let them run. So keeping score is very important. Let's imagine for a moment that this basketball hoop over here would be put down, and we'd have a team of boys here, four of them, playing basketball, and they'd just be randomly shooting hoops. And then we would change it up, and we would have two against two, and the score is 17-19. It's a whole different ball game. And what changed? The only thing is they know what the score is. I once read this story some time ago about this guy working at a steel mill. He was the shift one manager. One day his boss comes out and says, "So, how many batches of steel can you make in a shift?" "Oh, I don't know, half a dozen." He doesn't say it anymore. He goes up and puts a small chalkboard by the station that writes a six on there. Shift two comes on board, and the shift two manager asks, "What is the chalkboard supposed to mean?" "Oh, I don't know." Boss came out and said, "Ask how many batches of steel we can make in a shift." I said a half a dozen. He wrote it down. Shift one leaves, and shift two says to his team, "Now, we can do better than six." They put their sleeves up, and they get to work. When they're done, they have seven batches of steel done. They cross out the six and mark a seven down. Guess what? Next morning, shift one comes back. They see their six marked off and tells his people, "Now, we're going to show them a thing or two. We can do better." By the time they're done, they did 10 batches in one shift. The only thing that had changed was the score. I was faced with this a couple years ago at Greenfield. None of those young boys are here today, but we were struggling. Actually, maybe one of them is. We were struggling with production. I'm not sure how it is for you, but I don't like to go out and tell people, "Could you just kind of step it up? We would like to get more production through this line here." It's something about that just doesn't feel very good. So I had read this story. So I went out and I told the boys, so we blend fertilizer. We have batches anywhere from 10 pounds for one blend for a small blueberry patch to 100,000 pound blends for a large crop field. And I told the boys, so from now on, let's just, on the calendar here on the wall, let's just track how many pounds we make per day and also how many batches of fertilizer per day. And they did. From that day forward, it just went one direction, that's up. And they even liked their job better, but it was not long until the records were broken. And then they were broken again, and then again, and then again. I was blown away going from 60,000 pounds a day to 170,000 pounds with the same system. Here is a copy of the report from last spring. As you can see, we hit our last record, stands yet today, April 22nd of last year. The key that I want to impart to you today, keep it simple, but do something. It's invigorating to your team if we keep score. People, like we said, don't like to be managed. I like to think of one of my favorite chapters in Isaiah is Isaiah 40. In the end of the chapter says something about waiting on the Lord. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount with wings as the eagle. I'm sure you know that. Earlier in that chapter, he says something about the valleys being exalted, the hills brought low, the crooked made straight, and the rough made plain. I like to apply that to leaders. If we think about, we have this roadway, we put the guardrails out there, we smooth out the driveway, and our people can run smooth and comfortable. That's when our leaders will excel in their roles. And then there's meetings. Whenever we think that many people say, I just don't like meetings, and that's not uncommon to hear, but if two people get together to make a decision, you have a meeting. And if you're in leadership, you're going to have meetings, whether you like it or not. Just remember this quote, the way of the meeting, the way of the company usually holds true. Often, unfortunately, they're dull, they're boring, they're frustrating, and they're not fruitful. Ineffective meetings are often that way because there's no clear agenda. We start late, it goes beyond the end time. The person in charge has weak leadership, and then we have the people that are there to keep a seat warm, and they just agree with everything that's said. Does that mean we should be disagreeable? No. It does mean, though, that we speak our mind. They lack conflict and drama. How many of you like to read a storybook that lacks any drama and is dry and boring? Nobody. Meetings that are effective, they have something going on. The trust level is probably the single most important. The trust level is high. People speak their mind at the meeting, not at the hallway, the gathering, or the social function. This goes for boards and all levels of leadership. The leader minds the input from everyone. He is not, if you're the leader as the owner, doesn't mean that you will say how it needs to be done. It's your job to pull it out of your people. And then once you hear where everybody is, and you'll have a couple guys that won't speak up, and that's normal. Ask them, what do you think? If you continue to probe, they will give their input. We don't all have to agree in the meeting, but once the decision is made, support of the decision is mandatory. It has got to be agreed to. We're all in lockstep as we leave. As a leader, it's also your job to ride shotgun. That means if rabbits go down rabbit holes or different bunny trails, to bring those back on track. And then if you really want to be effective in your meetings, that you want people to like coming to your meetings, start rating them. Ask all the people to rate the meeting from 1 to 10, how effective and how productive it was. You don't have to rate it yourself if you're the chairman or the leader of the meeting, but ask the others and use that feedback to improve and grow. Effective meetings have a few components that are very important. They have a regular cadence. The same day, same place, same time every week. Things come up, I get it, but have a plan to go by. Ideally, never more than 90 minutes long. Start off your meetings with prayer and consider having a business personal best. This comes from, there's a business model, planning model called EOS. Again, a tool that you can use, but it refers to the business personal best. Having everyone at the table share a recent personal happening and also in the business. It kind of breaks down the business side of things and it helps us see into the life of each other. We all have things happening going on, and it helps us work in this together. The same way with if we have issues come up during the week between meetings, instead of going out interrupting Jake on the shop floor, consider writing them down, adding them to your issues list. Once we get together, we review our issues, and we do the IDS formula, identify, discuss, and solve issues. And then comes the secret code to getting things done. The WDWBW. If you can remember that today, that is the secret code to execution. Who does what by when? And write it down. If we record that to-do, next meeting comes up. So the proper way of doing it, the who does what by when is, so we come up with this, we need... make a reservation for a booth at a trade show, and who's going to do it? Well, so Jake's the person. Okay, Jake, by when do you expect to have that done? Well, I can do it by next Wednesday. So we write down, Jake, reserve booth at trade show. Next Wednesday is the deadline. Next Wednesday rolls around, and Jake says, we review the to-do list. Reserve booth at trade show. Jake, is that done? No, it's not, but I can do it today yet. Somehow, if we rewrite that down, those to-dos have a way of getting done in the 11th hour, but the key is to get done. The trust level is high. People feel comfortable speaking their mind. So then coming down to the conclusion here, we are blessed with a precious heritage. We heard this morning Ken speaking about a strong work ethic. We learn how to learn in school. We believe in learning by doing. We have a small group assembled here today of a couple hundred people. But think about this. Approximately 10,000 youth enter the workplace every year. That's just in the Amish community, plus all the Mennonite to add. All of those will have something to do. A few years ago, we were using Leonard Metter, the late AF business advisor, to help us, and he said this: the need for Anabaptist businesses is acute. Your children and your grandchildren will not all work in your company. The need for businesses to have Christian workplaces is very, very much important, very much needed. We have that opportunity. There's no better place to be that beacon on a hill at the workplace. We interact with our staff, our vendors, our suppliers. We can live out the Sermon on the Mount. And many leaders will be needed. A few years ago, there was a out-of-state Amish-owned company had come to the area for something, and they had an engineer along, I think he was more involved in the technology of metalworking. We do metalworking there. Around that same time, a few of our teenage employees had been summoned to go someplace to teach some engineers how to maximize this technology on, it was a robot welder, I believe, or some other machine that we had at the time. And in conversation with the engineer, we asked him, so how is that the engineers go to college and they learn all these things, and yet these teenage boys are going out there to teach them? And his response was something I'll never forget. He said, yes, those engineers learned and they know, but they never did. Our people have been blessed with a heritage of learning by doing. Let's work together and empower our people and our leaders that will be future dads. They will be ministers in church. They will lead companies. They will serve on boards in the community. It is much needed. A few more sources. There are a lot of leadership books out there. Read them with care. They are, again, tools. You must never forget the value of the Bible. If you really want to learn about leadership, read Proverbs and Matthew 5, 6, and 7. The answers are in there. There's other books that are helpful as well. One of the best ones is The Way of the Shepherd. It's a great book on leadership. May God help us empower our people.